Does an RE20 need a pop shield? Doesn't need a pop shield, does it? RE20? No, it's all right.
All right. So are we started?
Yeah.
So first off, a little announcement. We're going to be taking a break.
A sabbatical. What we're calling a sabbatical.
Yeah. Well, it's. I think a sabbatical is a year, isn't it?
Yeah.
No, you're not that lucky, listeners. We'll be going off the boil, off for about 3 weeks, I think.
Is that how long you're going away for?
I'm about to have a 3 week break. Do you know what? Which is the first like long holiday I've had for
since the last one.
Since January. No, for a long time, and I'm a bit scared of it. I feel like I'm staring into the abyss, Dan.
Mm-hmm. Are you going completely offline?
I'm going completely offline.
No.
But anyway.
So listen, we'll still do our monthly, our daily 7 o'clock.
7 o'clock meeting, Dan. Daily. Anyway, listen. So something I want, can I kick off this week?
Have you started the timer?
Oh, God, yeah.
You can kick off by starting a bloody timer.
We've got people coming, don't we, in half an hour.
It's a Jeopardy episode, just like it was last week. We've got a tiny bit more of a cushion, though. I'm not expecting anyone to be early, but you never know.
So this is my kicking off point, Dan.
Okay.
I had my hair cut. Nice. Thanks for noticing. And I went to a hairdresser I've not been to before. And the guy was like, typical hairdresser chat. Oh, you know, what?
Yeah.
Do you work near? What do you do?
Going anywhere nice for your holidays?
How about New Year's? Are you doing something nice on New Year? No, he says, like, what do you do? I was like, I'm a musician. He's like, oh, I love... Anyway, so we spent the haircut talking about music.
Okay.
He isn't a musician.
Yeah.
But he is just a really big music lover.
Okay.
And I just realized I love the way that non-musicians, passionate non-musicians, talk about music.
Right, yes.
Because they don't know any of the kind of technicalities of music, they talk about it in like strictly emotional terms.
Yeah.
And he was just saying how affecting he finds like certain bands. We were a real point between us, a band that we both love is Nine Inch Nails. So we talked quite a lot about Nine Inch Nails. Anyway, and I was thinking,
he wasn't like just love Atticus Ross's production.
No, he was just talking about like how much that music means to him. And anyway, and I was thinking, why? I wish sometimes that in the studio we talk about music more like that.
Okay. Yeah.
Particularly when it comes to collaborating with artists.
Mm.
And I think maybe, not all, but maybe some artists who are, say, songwriters and musicians first and aren't necessarily that technical, feel like they have to talk in language that's like, oh, can we add more compression here? Or can we talk in technical language? When firstly, that's often not that useful.
Yeah.
In describing what the artist might want. And because I've definitely worked with artists who just completely talk about things in completely emotional ways, and it's much more useful. That's my starting point.
Yeah, I completely agree with that, actually. I think I've done sometimes when there's time. Sometimes it feels like there isn't time, you know.
Time for what?
To fuck around at the start, and you just got to kind of get to work.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah.
But I've noticed it's quite a common thing. I think particularly with, I'd say, producers from the US when they come in and use our studios, aside from the fact they want to actually get familiar with the recording environment, it does seem like when the collaborators arrive, they do listen to tunes.
Yeah.
And I think it's a really good and kind of healthy thing. I'm just checking you're still on the camera because you moved back.
Am I on the camera?
But by the way, I've got a cold today, so that if
Dan's on Dan's on the Lemsip.
Just on the strongest Lemsip. This podcast is... Anyway. I think... Because often we listen to reference tracks in sessions, but it's actually a really good kicking off point to just go like, do you know what I was listening to on the way here, which I fucking love?
Yeah.
Check this out.
Yeah.
And it's just something which is completely different genre from what you're expecting to do. I think it's really important. And I also think there's some artists think have, it's a very understandable impulse, but sometimes I think, I don't think artists need to know
anything.
They don't need to know how EQ works or compression, or obviously reverb. I think everyone kind of understands what reverb is.
Not everyone understands pre-delay, Dan.
No, definitely not. No. But when,
I don't.
No. I you do. just turn it up, turn it down, you know?
No, I mean, by the way, I'm not saying that like artists should be completely ignorant as to all the technical. I'm not saying that. But yeah. I think even if they are super techie.
Yeah.
If the mix, the production, even the writing, whatever, isn't hitting the mark somehow, I'd rather solve that in emotional language than try and say, well, maybe the cue on the you know, is like...
Because that's, in a way, that's just backseat driving. And I don't mean that in a way of like, get the fuck out of my
don't
department.
Step on my shit.
You stay in your lane, motherfucker. I just mean that like, it's... If somebody, you know, take the example, if somebody says, the saxophone needs to be louder. I don't know why I picked saxophone.
Saxophone never needs to be louder.
No, it doesn't. The saxophone's too loud. The soprano saxophone is too... If it's a soprano, you obviously just mute it.
Too loud.
But it's just a bit, loud, you know. That's a better instruction than can you turn it down? Because...
Wasn't that the same thing?
Well, it's not, because sometimes the saxophone...
It's too bright.
It is too bright. It just needs a little EQ cut. Sometimes it's the saxophone feels loud because it's interfering with the vocal.
Yeah.
And the answer perhaps isn't so much to turn it down as to EQ it.
Yeah.
So, and that's kind of why, that's part of the reason why I like to have the artist in the room at some point.
Yeah.
Because when you go like that, you go like, actually, it might be the EQ. Have a listen to this, you know, and then you can go, is that hit? Do you like it like that? Like, as in with a little EQ cut, or do you prefer it just turned down? You know, and over email, that can take days.
Weeks.
Exactly.
Yes.
And you do the dreaded, I always feel like I'm in very dangerous territory when I send two versions of a mix. Of like mix 2A and mix 2B.
Is it like vocal up 1 dB?
Or just kind of like, can I hear the same mix with reverb in the on the back of vocals in the middle 8 or dry?
Yeah.
You know, and you send two versions. Because then you sort of fork the process.
Yeah. No,
split. I mean, it becomes a multiverse of mixes.
I think we've talked about this before. I remember the first record EP I ever produced. And I didn't fucking know what I was doing. This is pre-Urchin, actually.
Okay.
And I went to mastering. I kind of didn't really know what mastering was. Yeah. And just the mastering engineer, you talk about forks in the road. Like he introduced essentially Spaghetti Junction into something that we just finished.
Yeah.
And it was like, okay, here it is with the, you know, here's the first. He didn't sound like this. I don't know why. In my head, this is what he would
did
sound
go,
like.
Did you have to go to Henley to get it mastered?
So he's like, yeah, so this
was
is...
Was he wearing red trousers?
So here's the first master with, EQ dip around 250. Here's one. Anyway, but then there was basically 10 versions of the mastering, all 1% different.
Yes.
Which obviously sent the artist into a total spiral.
Yeah. Oh, this was you and the artist at the session?
No.
Or over email?
It was remotely.
Do you know what?
This is how long ago it was. It might not have even been over email. Mm. It might have been he sent us a CD with like 10 versions.
Oh, yeah.
And obviously, I'm listening on my then home system in a shared house.
Yeah.
That sounded, and I couldn't hear the difference between...
With a car alarm going off outside.
Car alarm going off outside. And
cats meowing.
Five housemates.
Yeah.
So shouting out. I didn't want to admit to the artist, I can't hear the difference between any of these versions.
Yeah.
And then the artist, and I just feel like now, and I said this before, but to that mastering engineer, take some responsibility. Yeah. Give me one version. Yeah. Give me one mastered version, because that's why we're paying you.
Yeah.
And obviously the mastering process they took, you know, like...
Still going on now.
It's still going on. That was in 2003. It's the 22-year anniversary of that.
And it's just like Fractal. There's 10 billion versions of the Master now.
Yeah, it's horrible. That's absolutely horrible. So what are you up to this week, Dan?
Decision hell.
You're back. You're ill.
Yeah.
You're doing a bit of mixing today.
Okay, going to go to bed.
Going to go to bed. Lucky you.
No, not just yet. Got a little meeting. I'm doing a slight retrofit of some strings to a track which has already been mixed, which is a little bit...
Explain that. A retrofit to...
So I've mixed a track with an artist and they've subsequently decided that the string parts that are on there are not cutting it. This is MIDI strings, by the way, or whatever we call soft synth strings. So they have kind of recomposed it in Logic. And to be honest, it's a better arrangement, but we've got to sort of get this into... Got to hoof it in there.
Hoof it in there. So have you basically got a string stem that you need to put into your mix?
Oh, I've got some MIDI. Recorded at a different BPM to the song.
It's just the arrangement. You don't have any sounds. Are you supplying the sounds?
Well, it's just Logic sounds.
It's Logic sounds.
Yeah, which are rubbish.
So what are you gonna do?
Gonna use the Labs BBC Symphony Orchestra plugin of the week. Have you used it?
No.
You should. It's free.
Is that a free one?
Yeah.
Oh no, it's the Spitfire people.
Yes. Yeah.
I have got some of their Lab stuff.
Yeah, the Lab stuff.
Not all of it.
The Lab stuff is, I mean, it's all amazing. There's a slight twinge of a villain of the week with the Lab stuff because...
Come on then. That's good. There goes our sponsorship.
Yeah. It's just constructive feedback, but somehow if you're switching sessions between computers, it often loses all the library. And rather than having a button in the plugin, which is just like fix.
Yeah.
You have to...
Do you have to reinstall or something?
You sort of have to do this stage and that stage. You have to sort of follow a process. And it's just sort of like, you could have just had a button that did that stage. Anyway, aside from that, it's well worth the hassle, the Lab stuff. But yeah. The Symphony Orchestra, it's like, it's the BBC Symphony Orchestra. You've got enough, I'm sure it's not better than the real Spitfire stuff
the real BBC Orchestra.
Through 300, well, yeah, exactly. You know, that's like 300 quid a pack.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you can get it each section of the orchestra, and, you know, the strings have got vibrato, and
it's good enough.
It's better than good enough. It can really the only thing is it's quite chambery, so you can't sort of quite fake a string quartet with it. You know, it is orchestra.
It's like 16 strings.
Or whatever, how many is in an orchestra.
I've never messed with like MIDI strings like that.
Yeah. Well, it's a little bit of an experiment, you know?
My MIDI...
It's going to work, obviously.
My MIDI string, MIDI string plugin of the week is a company called... Oh, what are they called? The string's called Blisco, and they're called Felt Instruments.
Mm.
And they sort of specialize in... dark, wonky samples.
Yeah.
So they've got a felt piano called Leco.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's kind of not in tune.
Yeah.
And it's quite noisy.
It's quite like the piano in your room.
Quite like piano in my room, yeah, yeah. But it's more felty. Anyway, they do a string sample called Blisco that's deliberately wonky, scratchy, bow noise samples. It's like the opposite of the BBC Symphony Orchestra.
Yeah.
I think there's like three players and it's like, it's really good. And it sort of sounds quite indie. Like,
yeah.
It sort of immediately sounds like, I'm going to say people that aren't very good. Clearly players that are really good, but recorded in a way that's kind of opposite of like, you know, whatever the opposite aesthetically of Yehudi Menuhin in the Barbican.
Okay. I don't know. I don't know. Who
it's not posh sound. It's not like big. It's like scratchy.
What's his...
Yehudi Menuhin is like one of the most famous violin players ever.
Oh, okay.
He's like
Well, I've never heard of him.
I think he was like, I think he's like an Israeli sort of violin master, died in the 70s.
Okay.
And there's like these very classical recordings of him.
That's sort of like being
a violin boss.
So the definitive versions of things. I suppose nothing's definitive.
Yeah,
in classical,
I know he's dead, but I know that like, yeah, I don't know much. Yeah, there's a few kind of classic things.
Mm. I'm
going to get corrected on a lot of things there.
Email podcast@urchinstudios.co.uk.
Yes.
That's podcast@urchinstudios.co.uk.
Yes. But anyway, good luck, Dan, with the MIDI.
Thank you. What are you doing?
Do you know what? I've got a writing session today, and then I'm going away tomorrow. I've got a writing session. I had a drum session. I had a really good drum session yesterday.
Oh yeah, tell us about it.
I will tell you about it. So it's adding drums to a track that's kind of mixed.
Okay, it's kind of like what I'm about to do.
Yeah, it is. But it's like the drum version of that,
the retrofit. Yeah,
which. When you do drums at the beginning of something,
uh-huh.
you've got much more rope in terms of what the artist doesn't have anything. It's not really expected. They're much more open-minded generally about like what you can or can't do.
Mm-hmm.
When the drums are essentially the last thing that's going on, everything's done, you know, they actually mixed it and then decided, you know what, these drums aren't right. We're going to...
Yeah.
We need to redo the drums.
Well, it's exactly the same, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's exactly the same, actually. Yeah. The parameters of which you're operating.
Except instead of the precision of MIDI, we've got you.
You know what? It was really challenging.
Yeah.
Because I'm sonically, firstly, the part virtually had to be the same.
Okay. Yeah.
Secondly, I'm sonically competing with a mixed track.
Okay. Yeah.
So everything's got to be super punchy, super bright. There's a lot of kind of noise to cut through. Also, that it wasn't like a sort of spongy, soft folk track. It's like, to me, it sounded like Matt Cameron, like Soundgarden.
Okay.
The references were like 90s.
Right.
Dave Grohl.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Did you use the Sound City plugin then?
No, I didn't. I used Ocean Way.
Ocean Way.
Ocean Way is the one. But yeah, it was quite challenging.
Let's dig into what. Let's just dig into what you into something you said there. So you said the part had to be virtually the same.
Virtually.
So explain to the listeners what was wrong with the original part, or why if it's needed to be the same, why did it need to be redone? Was that sort of like a dynamics thing or sound?
It was a sound thing.
Okay.
The way in which the drums were recorded, there was a lot of hats and cymbals getting into the other mics.
Okay.
Yeah. So they wanted the snares and the toms to be more punchy.
Okay.
That was really like the first thing. And when I listened to the mix, that it was quite hi-hat.
Yes.
Cymbal heavy. Also, they weren't happy with the tone of the drums, the cymbals were a bit bright.
Yeah.
It was, do you know what? It was,
so there's not so much to, because some things you can, if you've got a great overall sound, but you've got a lot of hat bleed, you know, there's things you can do.
There's things you can do. Yeah, I mean, I did say-
It's never perfect.
I did say to him, did you try re-triggering the snares and the toms? I think when you do that, when you re-trigger, it just gives you something different.
Mm.
It's different. It's not necessarily...
Yeah, it's got to be treated...
It gives a different aesthetic.
Yes, yeah.
Is what I'd say.
Which within that sort of... If you're on your way to Soundgarden, that...
No, maybe it doesn't work, actually. Maybe that's part of the character of
a band like Soundgarden, is it's not quite so... It's big.
It's big.
But not triggery big, not like
it's
metal.
It's not triggery big, exactly.
Your kick drum isn't... At like it's only like seven out of 10 on the clicky scale, you know.
Well, exactly, and it was a very challenging session. The difficulty is that I was recording drums in my small room, which I've got to say I've become very good at.
Mm.
There you go. I'm going to be very un-British and say that
you're the best.
well, do you know what? I'm the best at recording drums in my room because I've been doing it for 3 years now.
Yeah.
And I just know how the room's going to react.
Yeah.
But like getting the cymbals punchy, loud, clear, bright, but without them dominating the overheads was really difficult.
Yeah.
It was very difficult. But I think I got there.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned you used Ocean Way.
Yeah.
So were you mixing into the mix? Were you recording sort of into the mix?
I don't recall you into this. Well, I just had a vocal stem and the old drum stem, the vocal stem, and then the instrumental stem.
Yeah, okay. Which probably doesn't quite add up to the final thing, but that doesn't really matter.
No, and I'm not mixing it, so...
Yeah.
Not my problem.
It's me that's mixing it. It's what I'm doing later. we're taking the drums off. We're putting the strings on.
Yeah. I've got a writing session today. And that's me, Dan.
That's you. Where are we at on the time?
How long do we have? Okay, 10 minutes. I want to talk about something.
Okay.
So, Dan, as you know, we had a band in last week.
Yeah?
That we both did some stuff
We did a tag team, the very rarely done tag team engineering.
Can we talk about this band without talking about this band?
We can certainly have a try.
You know, I started the podcast off by talking about communication and how... Communication is like key.
Yeah.
Something I noticed about this band. So this band have been together a long time and have quite a long sort of history.
Yeah.
They are such good communicators.
Yeah.
With each other.
Yeah.
Like in the band, everybody's got a very defined role.
Yeah.
They were all, everyone in that group, everyone's voice got heard.
Yeah.
They were very patient. If one member needed to get something together and to sort of try something out,
yeah,
the others waited for that person to do that. There was no idea that was shot down.
Yeah.
If the idea didn't work, they let it go. I just thought, my God.
Yeah.
That's why you guys make really fucking good music.
Yeah.
While you're still together.
Yeah.
And it was just a beautiful thing to observe. I don't know if you noticed that. It was a beautiful thing to observe.
I noticed that exactly the same thing, because it definitely was one of those sessions where, from an engineering point of view, I'm not trying to blow my own trumpet.
I nailed it.
We had a Monday. It was a Monday to Friday. There was a large amount of setup on the first day,
which I didn't do.
No, it was Matt didn't do, which I did.
Yes. I packed down though. I would say that
yes,
it was a big pack down.
Yeah, big setup, big pack down. But the middle bit was largely just listening to them write songs.
Yeah,
which I've got to say it's a lovely process.
It was really
good. When you just kind of
and I just thought that like how the communication within a creative group,
yeah,
it's just that's where the success or failure of it lies.
Yeah.
And it's quite rare because usually in bands there's a lot of jealousies and a lot of like and friction.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Fear. And I was thinking I've sort of been around other bands where have done really well, and it's partly because God, their communication is just really good. And also the creative situations I've been in, the ones that have done really well.
Yeah,
it's when communication flows and everyone has their role, is respected. Obviously, I think in any creative project, there's usually a little bit of there can be tensions, but those aren't the overriding.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
The overriding emotion.
Yeah, and you need a sort of circle of trust. You know,
yeah,
like in Meet the Parents. Well, no, not like in Meet the Parents. Actually.
I'm not familiar with that reference.
Oh, okay. Oh, sorry. Okay. We'll just, anyone who knows, understands that, enjoy it. We'll just move on.
Yeah.
You've got to have a trusting environment because you need to be able to, the best creative processes involve trying things out. And then failing. Exactly. Failing in front of your peers or doing things that kind of, you might potentially make an arse of yourself, you know. And I find as a producer, if there's, you know, maybe bands that are not as experienced as these guys,
often come in with a lot of preconceived notions about what they're doing.
And that
applies to whether they're on a major label or an indie label, or it's their first. I mean, if it's their first recording, there's almost always preconceived notions about what the process is. But even if it's sort of like talented amateurs or whatever, quite often the baggage comes in the room. And I quite often find...
Rung the bell?
No. That's just a chat group. unrelated. I sort of feel like I sometimes have to make an arse of myself, almost on purpose.
You always make an arse out of yourself, Dan.
It really comes naturally.
What do you mean?
Sometimes if people are not... People need to be comfortable to express their ideas, and then for them to be bad, and when the idea is bad, the world doesn't end.
Yes.
You know? I certainly used to be that person.
Yeah, me too, for sure.
You know?
For sure, yeah.
So when you, particularly with, you know, maybe it's your first day or two with a group or even a solo, I think it's like maybe slightly harder with a solo artist, but... if you make an arse of yourself, you know, if you like try out an idea, well, you can just get some ideas rolling. Some of them will be good, some of them will be bad.
Yeah.
But when the bad ones are shown to be shit, then it's like, that was fine, you know? That wasn't bad. Nobody died. The studio didn't burn down. So often that encourages other people to, it relaxes, you know, you can read the tension sometimes that people got within themselves.
The tension's the heart. I, we've both done sessions where the band come, or the group of whatever, come into the room, and the first thing you notice is to say, oh God, there's loads of tension here.
Yeah. Yeah.
And today is just going to be about managing that.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. I find it can definitely disarm some of the tension if you... Go like, you know.
You being a twat.
Yeah. I mean, I think you have to be a bit kind of entertaining. There was a producer that we had, I won't say who it is, but he said, he's like, sometimes the producer just needs to be Krusty the Clown. You know? He's like,
did Rick Rubin say that?
Yeah, exactly. When the band's in the room, you have to be like, hey, hey, kids. And then when they're out of the room, you just go, that's you gotta get the fucking energy up sometimes, because particularly
I think you gotta do anything you can.
Yeah, and because that might making an ass of myself is it's a real specialty. I normally look to that.
Yeah. Have you heard the new Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds song?
No, been away, mate. I haven't listened to any music.
Dave Fridman mixed it.
Oh yes.
It's really...
Call back to episode 7 or 8 podcasts ago.
Which is before it was released. And then I heard it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, God damn it. Dave Fridman's got a really identifiable sound.
Uh-huh. Is it Fridman-y in the same way? Because when I think Fridman, I think MGMT.
No, because he produced that. So it doesn't quite have those... kind of whatever the Fridman thing is, distortion, very lush delays, you know, the kind of
everything's kind of turned up to 11.
Yeah, but it does have it, and I don't know why, but when I was listening to it, I've gone, yes, this is really Fridman-y, this mix.
Uh-huh.
Why
what do you think what do you think Nick would have to say about it?
Out of respect for Susie Stapleton, I'm not going to do an Australian accent, because he obviously like loved it, and him and Warren wouldn't have approved it.
Yeah.
But it was
a Nick Warren production in the classical style.
What other mixes, Dan, do you think have very identifiable sonic signatures?
I think it's very hard to pick a mixer out of a lineup, to be honest. If someone had like 5 tracks, and they played to you, and you were like, who mixed track number 1, who mixed track number 2, who mixed track number 3, four, five, etc. I think it would be quite difficult to pick a mixer out of a lineup on any given track without some other information, you know.
However, I agree with that. However, I would say that I often hear things and I go, God, this sounds great.
Yeah.
And then I look at who the mixer. So for example, there was I was listening to a song from the 80s by that band Deacon Blue. Quite a cheesy song, right? What's it called? It's called Dignity.
Okay.
And I think it came on the radio, and I was like, God, sonically, this just sounds really great.
Right.
And it was Clear Mountain. I was like, yeah. Of course it is.
Yeah.
It's just got all of those kind of, you know, loud, it's just really clear. I was like, then.
I mean, I would certainly take a guess, but
I'm not saying I would have got it had I. When I heard it come on the radio, I was like, oh, this is pure Clear Mountain.
Yeah.
But then when I looked it up, I was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's got all those hallmarks.
And also, there's contextual clues to certain things. Like if it's a massive artist, and you're like, okay, massive artist,
80s
single. Well, no, or well,
it was probably Clear Mountain.
Yeah, and if it's like sort of a massive band, and it's the single, good chance it's Spike Stent did the singles.
Now, yeah. I find that there's two mixes I'm going to shout out that I often hear, like New Music Friday things. I go, God, these sound great. Who mixed it?
Yeah.
And it's often Bapti, Ben, who's just great.
Yeah.
Or David Wrench.
Yeah.
I think David
Wrench is quite identifiable. But again, there's contextual clues, you know?
Yeah.
Because there's he does
cool shit.
Yeah, he often works within particular genres, you know, with the exception of the Blur album, which was felt somewhat outside. I mean, I thought it was great, but it wasn't. It was felt like it wasn't typical for him.
Yes, yes, yes.
You know?
That's the buzzer. The buzzer of destiny.
Yeah.
We'll see you, everybody, in 3 weeks, 4 weeks, three weeks. Little break, little sabbatical.
Break. If anyone's got anything to say to us, do write in. Don't be shy.
Don't be shy.
Don't be shy. If you want to guess where Matt's going on holiday.
Bottom of my garden.
Exactly. It's got shed.
For 3 weeks.
It's been being built for the last 3 months.
Yeah. it's a safe space for me.
Soundproof room. He's got a mountain of chocolate bars and a Nintendo Switch.
Yay. Okay, goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye. We'll
be safe, be well. Bye.
Yeah, stay safe.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Yeah.